This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Social upheaval has grasped America from coast to coast over the last several weeks. Every expert seems to have their own reasons why they believe that's been the case. And it's hard to wrap up the pandemic, economic anxieties, racial justice, and our elections all in one bundle. That's why Lake Effect's Julian Haida recently called up Northwestern University professor Jeffrey Winters, the author of Oligarchy, to see if there's something we're missing in these conversations.
Jeffrey Winters, thanks so much for joining us on Lake Effect.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Julian.
A lot of what's been going on in recent weeks, whether it be coronavirus related or some of these kinds of racial justice protests, have been reduced by pundits, national commentators, local commentators to partisanship. Some have pointed out even that, like, you know, an organization like Black Lives Matter, for example, funnels its fundraising through Act Blue. It's a democratically affiliated PAC. Is it surprising to you that some racial justice activists see their dollars going the farthest, you know, going towards Democratic candidates?
I think there is a disconnect going on within the Democratic Party between where a lot of its base is. So we had the Bernie Sanders wing on the one hand, younger people who were really focused on inequality issues, material issues, household bottom line issues, and that group is still out there and is wondering what piece of the Democratic Party and platform they're going to get going into the convention in Milwaukee. And you've also now got a very serious issue of racial justice, policing, and so on, where someone like Biden is already saying his interpretation of defund the police is not necessarily the same as many of those folks who are saying, you know, we're not talking about not having police. We're talking about changing the way we address issues of violence, inequality in communities, and not just having it be a question of forces being put out there and buying tanks for local police forces, but addressing these issues in a very different way. So I think this mixture of issues going into the fall poses some real problems for the Democrats. And my guess is Biden is going to have to move substantially on the way he's talking about these issues right now.
It seems like people are surprised or caught off guard in maybe the same way that some were surprised that Donald Trump did in fact get elected in 2016, that civil disobedience has arisen. So, you know, where can someone go to no longer be so surprised so often that people are angry?
Yeah. You know, I think the scale and the fury of the protests really struck significant parts of the United States as very, very surprising. And what does that tell us? It first of all tells us that there is a pent up, suppressed level of anger and frustration that we just got a glimpse of. But it also tells us that there's a whole nother part of America that doesn't see it, doesn't experience it, has no idea what the lived experience of people who are not only in the case of Floyd, not only killed by the police, but tortured. I mean, this was actually a case of torture. To suffocate someone over an 8 or 9 minute period is to engage in torture. I don't know if you've ever experienced not being able to breathe, but some people who have nearly drowned know what the panic is like. You're aware you can't breathe, and it is horrifying. And so that was not an outlier experience, and to witness that just tapped into a lived experience of a large swath of the of American population. We saw them pour out. And so that disconnect between sort of, oh my God, where did this come from? Why this sudden surge of activism, and why all the anger, and why the looting, and why the lack of patience? It shows that we have at least two different Americas, one white and one not white, and that needs to be reconciled. And I don't think a commission is going to do it. I don't think you're going to talk this problem away. We're going to have to see actual action. And I think this issue is going to get expressed in the campaign going into November for sure.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM 89.7, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Julian Haida. And with me is Jeffrey Winters. He's a professor of political science and the director of the Equality, Development, and Globalization Studies program at Northwestern University. Now, you mentioned the looting, and I want to ask you about the ways that looting has been perceived. I've seen people from, you know, Twitter activists to even, you know, kind of stoic organizations, you know, very liberal organizations like the Open World Society comparing bailouts that companies got, people got due to the coronavirus pandemic and recession to a sort of state-sanctioned looting. And now, I think a lot of people, when they look at the protests in the street, they don't necessarily think that this is a response to coronavirus. What is your take on that, that some people can legally loot?
You know, what you're describing, Julian, is a way of connecting dots that are in different spaces but are in fact connected. So, you know, what connects these things is who gets what in society? And how, for example, does the government play a major role in redistribution? So, for example, when we do a massive Washington-led Fed Reserve-based bailout of the economy, one of the first questions, I mean, we're talking about taking public funds and distributing them around. And one of the big questions is redistribution going on in a moment like that? And are the wealthy and the powerful able to capture, latch on to, and capture those resources in a way that the average household is not able to do? And so what we saw in the case of the coronavirus, economic response was to try to, there was some effort made to try to design this package in a way that was supposed to help the average person, the average household, small businesses. But what we in fact saw was that it supported very large corporations, those who were able to lobby in Washington to get huge chunks and pieces of this. It supported very, very large salaries at large corporations. It pushed stock prices up. So we saw a massive increase in the wealth of the top 50 or so billionaires in the United States at a time when unemployment was reaching staggering levels at the bottom of society. So the extraordinary thing happening in the middle of this crisis is that not only are people dying during the coronavirus pandemic, but an already unequal America is becoming dramatically more unequal in this moment. And at the same time that was happening, suddenly we have this moment of anger and protest, and we had dramatic images of people running into Target stores and other kinds of stores, you know, grabbing tennis shoes or whatever it was they were grabbing, boxes of this and that, and running out with them. And somehow that struck people as outrageous. Although we're talking about crumbs, really. We are talking about people who don't have much of anything, running in, seeing an opportunity to grab a few items and run out with them. And that looks very dramatic. And we say, oh my God, this offends our sensibilities of what is just and what a violation of societal norms and so on. And yet there's no anger at the obscene level of redistribution and massive inequality unfolding right under their eyes at the same moment at a level of trillions of dollars compared to the tiny little crumbs of what people were running out of storefronts with.
Yeah, that reminds me of a viral video that I'd play you a clip, but it is so laden with expletives that we cannot play it on public radio. But it is really kind of heartfelt. It's of a woman in Minneapolis who, when reacting to a reporter's question about looting, references the fact that so many Black Americans don't really own much. There's large lines of credit. You talk about some of the stimulus checks that we all got and kind of the hoops that some people had to jump through who don't have necessarily, you know, a bank account or a traditional accountant to get that $1,200 stimulus check. And how, when the reporter asked, well, why would you do this to your own neighborhood? She says, this isn't my neighborhood. I don't own anything. It's all on credit. So when you hear something like that, the idea of property versus debt at a time like the coronavirus and of, you know, racial upheaval, what kind of strikes you as a possible, you know, solution or kind of reframing this issue that is a little bit more accurate to our understanding of winners and losers in America?
By the way, I also saw that that viral video, and it was arresting to watch it. And first of all, just a quick statistic. So if you take the average person in the bottom 50% of the United States and you ask the question, how much total net savings or worth do they have and property? It's not much, but the average African American has 1/10 what the average white person in the bottom half of the population has. So we're talking about, even among people who don't have much, there's an incredible racial disparity, which is mind-boggling. So that's just a first point that underscores what we saw in that viral video. But also one of the things that woman said at the very end was, you know, you may be outraged by what's going on with the images you're seeing and the anger you're seeing expressed, but her closing line was, you know, a lot of Americans should be glad that what African Americans want right now is justice, not revenge. And what she was actually saying there was that the folks who were protesting were trying to get the United States to live up to the ideals it claims to have, and that if anything, the anger that was being expressed was contained to a justice narrative and not going into a revenge narrative, we're talking about racial civil war at that point. And so she was actually saying, folks, this could be much worse than it is. So be grateful that that things are being directed in the kind of justice direction that they're being directed. I'm a bit pessimistic in the moment. I think the current situation in the United States is that Democrats are very likely to err on the side of being more conservative just because their goal is not necessarily to address inequality in America and racial issues in America. Their goal is to knock Donald Trump out of office. And the view that is prevalent among Democrats is that that can be done not by being, not by in a more radical way addressing fundamental issues in society, but by moving toward the center and by trying to grab as much of the center as possible, suburban, you know, soccer moms or however they're described, who would be frightened by a more radical agenda. So if anything, the goal to retake the Senate and the goal to push Donald Trump out is, if anything, going to downplay this moment as really being one in which the kinds of issues that are exploding in our face today are really going to be addressed. I'm a little bit pessimistic that that's going to happen.
So taking that insight and understanding, for example, what happened in Wisconsin during the primary, discourses around voter suppression, right? The mail-in ballot issue that is such a hot button issue, especially among the American right. What do you expect to happen in November? And what happens if Donald Trump gets reelected and the Democrats realize their strategy may have failed?
Let me offer you a fundamental insight from what we know in political science. And this is a real simple formula. If all of the base, or if a large proportion of the base who were essentially Democrats in the United States showed up to vote and were actually able to vote, the Democratic Party would win across the country, for the most part, on a massive scale at almost every level. And the Republicans understand this, right? So the Republicans know that they need to really energize their base to show up and be very ideologically focused. Everything is at stake. The Democrats have a much harder time for reasons that are very too long to go into in this interview. And when you add on top of that the fact that Republicans go out of their way to suppress the vote. Why do they do that? For the reasons I just said. And by the way, there's very little evidence that Democrats go out of their way to suppress the votes of Republicans in return. This is really something that the Republicans have really refined and are very, very good at. And they need to suppress the vote to win. And so here's what's going to determine the outcome in November. If the Democrats can really get their base to show up and to vote, we're going to see a massive shift in the United States. But if there is not energy for the agenda, for the candidates, then these voter suppression efforts are really going to be what determines the outcome in district after district and contest after contest. And so that's why these efforts really gin up in the lead up to the elections, because we're talking about, in some cases, the vote for Trump in several swing states was as small as 10 or 20,000 votes. That's a very, very small number of votes to swing the entire electoral college for those states in favor of one candidate or the other. So this is something really to keep an eye on for November.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, we can keep going and discussing these topics. Hope to talk to you again soon. Thanks so much for joining us, Jeffrey Winters.
My pleasure, Julian.
Jeffrey Winters is professor of political science and director of the Equality, Development, and Globalization Studies program at Northwestern. He's also the author of Oligarchy, as well as many books on economics, democracy, and inequality in America and abroad. He spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida.